And joining me to talk about one of those is Jean McKinney. She is a military journalist and a documentary filmmaker, and she has written the book Triumph Over the Taliban, the untold story of U.S. Marines' courageous fight to save Camp Bastion. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, there was a lot that went on during, I guess that would be Operation Enduring Freedom, that was the Afghan war. You know, that war went on for a long time, and there's so much politics around it, so little said about positive successes, that you've gone back and this particular battle focused on. What prompted you to want to do that?
Well, I heard about it from a Marine that I'd interviewed previously and started looking into it. He introduced me to a few people, and it sounded incredible. And so I asked myself, why haven't we heard about this? It happened 3 days after the attack on Benghazi. So I start talking to a few of the Marines that were there, interviewing them, and it just kind of grew from there. And then because I'm a researcher, I dug into it, and then I found sort of a Pandora's box of investigations of why this cover-up or why this battle was covered up. And that just, then I had to tell the whole story.
So now this dates back to 2012. So, I mean, they'd been in there. I mean, they've been dealing with Afghanistan. The military had been in Afghanistan since early on. I mean, since 2001, pretty much. And, you know, didn't draw out of there until 2021 or 2022. So you're right at the midpoint there. Tell me a little bit about Camp Bastion and what its significance is.
Okay, well, Camp Bastion was one of the largest, if not the largest, forward operating hubs in Afghanistan. It was huge. The size of it alone was commanding. It covered 40 square miles with 25 miles fence line. So that was hard to defend, number one. And so troops would go in and out of that operating hub, and operations were launched from there. And it was in Helmand Province, which is the most volatile area in Afghanistan at the time, because, number one, due to the poppy grown there and the poppy sales, the opium sales that fueled the insurgency. And so us there was a threat to that income for the Taliban. And there was just a lot of fighting going on. They were very entrenched in that area, protecting their investments in the poppies. So, and then their overall goal to control populations.
So you get this a few days after you noted it's just a few days after Benghazi, and all the news coverage, of course, is all focusing on that. But this ended up happening, and this is about the time, too, that the message from the United States is, okay, we're beginning to draw down our troops, which in the eyes of the Middle East often means to them, hey, we're weak. And, you know, a lot of things combined, but tell me about the attack.
Well, that's a good point about the eyes of the Middle East, because exactly that, when you announce to the world, including them, that we're going to be taking out a significant amount of troops, you know, just 2 years prior, there was 100,000 troops over there in that region. And then we started drawing down, and we were accomplishing a lot of things at that time. We didn't have any more attacks on the homeland. We deterred those types of things all the whole time we were there. We won a lot of the smaller battles. And so this attack was, the Taliban leveraged that opportunity of reduced manpower. And then there were other things involved, like it was a British built base, and there was British complacency about poppy fields that were growing right up to the perimeter on the airfield perimeter, which afforded enemy, you know, observation and concealment. And it's exactly where that enemy breached the wire is where those poppy fields were. And so the attack was, by a thinking enemy. And it just, there's just so many lessons learned there that we can't trust them. We've got to trust our people on the ground, because our U.S. commanders came in when they deployed there to conduct the drawdown. It was, you've got to keep in mind, it's a dual mission where they're doing 24/7 counterinsurgency operations, and they're also having to tear down the base. And so the base, doing that alone is a massive job when you've got that big of a base. So they just, the Taliban leveraged opportunity is what they did, because there was complacency, and then our generals' hands were tied when they tried to fix these security gaps that they saw when they got there.
That's a story quite a bit of many wars, honestly, in recent history. So the Taliban attacks this base, which is kind of understaffed and under-equipped and right up by the poppy fields. And the response, I guess, truly heroic. These guys and ladies would have been lauded as heroes had it been a different era. Tell me about the attack itself, and tell me about the response of the U.S. Marines and others.
Yeah, I would love to do that. The Marines, like I mentioned, that when 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing arrived at Bastion, there were some pretty blaring security gaps that our generals tried to fix before the attack. And so they did everything they could to do that, even with their hands tied. But literally, that airfield perimeter was a chain link fence. And there were towers that were set back from the fence, but they weren't regularly manned because that was the British job and they didn't do a very good job of that. Plus, they used third party contractors. So that were reported sleeping on the job and this type of thing. So our Marines became the first line of defense once they realized that there was an enemy inside the wire. And this is why this battle is so amazing, because they're caught by surprise. It's 10 o'clock at night. It's a very, very dark night, 2% illumination, which is highly unusual. And so they realize they're under attack when they start hearing huge explosions. And you got to realize they're all over the airfield at this point. They're in the living spaces. They're on the flight lines. They're in the fuel farm area. They're in the chow hall. They're in the gym. They're everywhere. And so they came together using their training, using their wits, using their skill to find this enemy. Nobody knew how many had gotten through, how many, or what their plans were. And this is one of the things that is such a myth about this attack, is why the Taliban did this. But they mobilized, they came together like gears ticking in a clock, and they hunted these guys down and they neutralized the threat, except for one who was injured and captured. So the attack itself is, when you're in a foreign environment like that, you have, lines of defense. I mean, kind of compare it to a house. We live in Southern California and we have to have 100 feet of defense from fires so the fires don't come up to the house. Well, the British had not provided that, because they let villages encroach the base right up to the fence line. And so our guys became that first line of defense. And Marines do what Marines do, right? You just have to think of all the legacies in World War One and Two of Marines taking the fight to the enemy and winning over them.
Yeah, and the thing is, at that time, because that's right after Benghazi, and one of the things about that was there seemed to be kind of some complacency as far as how much security we were going to provide. Because if we were providing too much, if we did begin to beef up these places, whether it be, the consulate in Benghazi, or whether it be here in Afghanistan in the battle you're talking about, I think that there was politics involved. There's always politics involved in war. And they didn't want to fortify things and send more people in there because, number one, it would negate their drawdown. And number two, it would say, well, if you're needing to fortify, then there must be weakness here. And they didn't want that weakness shown. And I'm wondering, you know, coming off of Benghazi, which is kind of the same story, just complacency. Why didn't more Americans hear about these heroic acts?
Well, because they didn't do what they were supposed to do, for one thing, the government. In the case of, I can't really speak on Benghazi at the moment because we have a limited amount of time, but I will if we want to do this again. But as far as Bastion goes, the political optics became the foremost thing versus the safety of our troops on the ground. And that's really what it amounted to. They didn't want to look this. They didn't want to look that. I think the same thing could be applied to the Benghazi situation. Well, you know, when you send young men and women over to war, you better well protect them. And you should listen to the commanders on the ground. And the commanders on the ground were saying, we don't have enough of what we need to do the job we need to do to secure the base. And they kept asking for things, and they were denied every single time because the drawdown. And you got to realize we're going through a pivotal era there where we're going from boots on the ground, okay, all those years from 2001 up to 2012. And now we're turning it into a train and assist role. And guess who's going to take over? Who's going to take over that role that we've been providing all those years at our level of competency? Well, the Afghans weren't ready for that then. We were helping them along, but they certainly weren't ready to do that. So, but politics reigned, and they went ahead and did these things anyway. Even when they knew that the risk was high and the resources were low.
Well, and you note that fighting the Taliban, in that case, they saved civilian contractors, they saved each other, and they saved a massive amount of aircraft and equipment that was also stationed there.
Absolutely. That was never talked about. It wasn't talked about in the investigations that followed, which is a whole other line of discussion. But they didn't talk about everything they saved. There were two Marines tragically killed in the initial response before anybody really knew much of anything. But they were leading their men to battle. They didn't even honor that. You know, all they were concerned about is looking for fall guys after this all happened. And that didn't even start happening until 8 months down the road. So the very, very odd thing is everything our generals asked for before the attack that could have prevented the attack, they instituted immediately after the attack. And things were going along fine. There were no more incidences. The base had been breached many times before the attack. But after that, security was tight because we were in charge at that time. Because before that, the responsibility was split because we've got three major forces on that piece of ground. We've got the U.S., we've got the Brits, and we've got the Afghan forces. And all that security was split in a very outdated agreement that didn't really serve the troops on that base at the time, because it was the Marine Corps itself has protocol that called unified command. And it makes a lot of sense. If you're in a situation, you don't want to be reliant on another nation's forces to protect your troops. You want to protect them yourself.
Yeah, so, that whole thing. And of course, you having talked to these veterans, for the fact that you do what you're trained to do, you do it in really difficult conditions. You are the underdog because they took it to you, and you successfully complete a mission that you were trained to do against all odds. To have it not recognized is bad enough. And of course, now you get to the end of the Afghan war and you've got the veterans that were a part of that, including the veterans you've been talking to, and kind of the way that we exited there I imagine that does not that doesn't sit well with those veterans either.
Well, you've got another great point there. It's I think a lot of veterans and those I've talked to also, they feel like what they did over there was meaningless, you know, especially after the politicians lost the war at the end, you know, the way they handled that. The smaller wars throughout the 20 years in Afghanistan, there were many battles won in the smaller wars, the missions that were going on daily. But the greater war was lost not by the military. Well, I should take that back. The people that were at the Pentagon at the time did a shocking job of how they handled that whole withdrawal at the end. But they were also under order of the president. You know, the president is the main decider in foreign policy and how the military operates. They have to get approval from the president.
Well, I tell you what, we're running out of time here, but I've got to say, Gene, I'm glad that you're getting this word out there, because I think that these members of the military that were part of that endeavor for, you know, was 20 years essentially, deserve to have what they did recognized. And it's great that you've been able to do this triumph over the Taliban. Gene McKinney, Gene, where can folks get this book? And do you have anything online that they can go to?
Yeah, they can get it on Amazon. Just type in Triumph Over the Taliban. It'll take you right to the page. They can get it there in Kindle, hardback, or paperback. And also my website, www.patriotprofileswithanS.com. They can find it there.
All right. Well, thank you so much, ma'am. And you have a great rest of your week.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Take care.